back in on Canuck Central this hour, brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Lots still to get to here on the program, as Dan Hamhuis will be joining us, BC Hockey Hall of Famer now, just inducted over the last little while, and he will join us, obviously, get his take on that, give him our congratulations for being in the BC Hockey Hall of Fame, and also, you know, getting together with, you know, the best players on planet Earth, and trying to play hockey together and playing in positions you may not be used to at all times. Of course, he a 2014 gold medal winner with Team Canada. Let's bring in our next guest. It is Don Taylor, Donnie and Dolly, which is 10 to noon on Czech TV, Monday through Friday. And he joins us here on Canuck Central every single Monday. Donnie, what are you watching these next couple of weeks, other than the Four Nations games? But you got some series you got to catch up on here with no Canucks games?
You know, I haven't really even thought about it. I'm actually pretty pumped about the Four Nations face-off. I don't know if I'm the only one, but I am. I should say this, that... Hold on, there you go. That's better. Sorry, guys. That's outside interference there. I wanted to watch it, and then now, after watching these guys at practice this afternoon and seeing them in their country's colors, I got really jacked up. It was looking at the lineups, you know, McKinnon on the wing. What's that all about? And it's pretty intriguing, But as far as series goes, I haven't watched anything for a while. You know what I do is like I rewatch stuff. Like I'm just obsessed with Mad Men.
Well, you're watching Mad Men for the seventh time. Like, come on.
Yes, Mad Men, The Sopranos. And I feel bad. Like I should be investing my time in another series just to make myself a little more well-rounded, but I just can't do it. I always go to I always go with the proven winners.
It takes so much energy to watch something new, right? Something you really watched before is just easier. You're just like, this is easy. Just let it go.
Yeah, and then when you get older, it's like I give things about 5 minutes. Series is terrible. You know, I just haven't got time to go through one or two actual episodes to judge it properly.
No, I'm with you on that. And you know, on the Four Nations, obviously the Summit Series was before you know, me and Reach's time, so I can't really speak about it. But there was
hold on a sec. Oh, we're going down the old man.
No, I'm not. That's not the point of this. That's not the point of it.
I don't know. That fell on
that. I can talk about it, though, if you want.
I'm with you, Donnie. I think he's throwing a little shade your way.
No, I wasn't really throwing shade. Well, maybe. But that wasn't the intention. That wasn't my main goal. So, like, the Summit Series, there was, like, obviously there was political issues going on. The Cold War was happening, right? It felt like a fight between good and evil. And obviously, our current circumstance is far different in the world. I'm not trying to say we have a fight between good and evil between Canada and the U.S. But with all this tariff nonsense, there's this real air of stupidity going on, you know, right now. And, you know, there are a lot of angry Canadians, and we know how Americans feel about Canada. I mean, they don't even know we exist half the time. So, like, it kind of feels like there's more at stake than a normal best-on-best, right? Like, it's not quite Summit Series. I don't want to go that far and, you know, and overrate what's going on. But, like, there is some real political angst over top of this time.
Well, that's a great point. But in all seriousness, though, yeah, and I do remember the Summit Series. The only time my mom and dad let me skip out of school. But there was that political level that you don't... Everybody's so friendly now, and the world's such a, you know, so much smaller now. We all, you know, well, since we all get along, but most of us get along and have some idea of what each other is all about. And, you know, that hockey is much more of an international game. But that level was there then, and there was that level of hatred and the disrespect of somebody else stealing our game. How dare you be good at the game that we're supposed to be the best at? But now that political level with the U.S. and Canada, but I just get, you know, this time around, I think it's going to blow over, you know, like I'm pretty sure.
Right.
I don't know. Trump, Trump keeps saying he wants to make us the 51st state. So we'll see if this blows over or not.
I don't. Yeah. We all want to join, you know, like, hey, come on. But maybe he's thinking of the four nations when he's saying that.
Yeah.
Just to pump it up. I'm not really sure. But there is that, you know, little bit of political level there. But nothing like 72 in the summit series when there was, you know, hatred and mystery and cheating and all that going on. It made it, you kind of hate to say it, but it kind of made it better in a way, like just because the feelings were really, really deep. And, I miss that sort of thing. But I don't know, you throw on the colors and it's still really important to the players and I think most of the fans.
Yeah, I feel like even if the first couple of games maybe don't have the most intensity when Canada plays Sweden or the U.S. plays Finland, by the time they get to Canada-U.S. at the Bell Center on Saturday, and who knows what's going to happen with the U.S. anthem at that point, but like the Bell Center's just got a different atmosphere in general for hockey games, and you put an international twist onto it, I feel like there's no way that these guys won't automatically feel the energy of the crowd and have that in and of itself create an intensity about the game.
Well, and then guys, all of that definitely, plus the fact that we haven't seen this for so long.
Yeah.
And I know, like you said, there are games before, but that big rivalry between Canada and the U.S., that political level, and the fact that, you know, really, you know, when's the last time we've really seen this? 2014? And let's not forget, 2014, we had to wake up at 3 or 4 in the morning to see the gold medal game. So, you know, I don't know how many people watched it. Probably a lot. Canadians are crazy about hockey, but this is the first time in a long time there's that thirst, there's that thought that this is an appetizer for the main meal, which is the entree, which is coming up next year. So that's all going to play into it. The tariffs, you name it. It should be a lot of fun Saturday. So, you know, stop watching Mad Men reruns and The Sopranos. Make me check out that game on Saturday. But I will stand by something I said a while ago, and that is a big goal for Pettersson against Canada tomorrow. Look for it.
Oh, okay. So Donnie's on the train. Pettersson rounding into form just in time for the Four Nations.
Not really. It's just because I know what the Canucks are all about, and it would just be so Canuck for him to score a big goal against Canada, right? And, you know, listen, maybe he gave us a little bit of a taste of what could be happening with that incredible shift he had on Saturday night, and just the game he played was pretty good.
I feel like the way Rick Tocchet spoke about Pettersson after the game and what he hopes to see from Pettersson at the Four Nations kind of speaks to like just how heavy the whole first bit of the season has been. Like, just go and have fun. I mean, it's saying a lot without saying anything, really, when Rick Tocchet says that, given what we know about how the first 50 games went.
Yeah, well, the first thing I thought of is what you hinted at there is he didn't have much fun the first few games, you know, the first bit of this season. So and I think that says a lot. And you even saw him at practice today smiling. And we haven't seen that a whole lot now, whether that's, you know, because of JT Miller or just not playing well or the knee tendonitis. I'm not really sure, but it looked like he was a bit lighter today, like, I mean, mood wise. And if that continues throughout this tournament and the Canucks can benefit, so much the better.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all want to see this team really take another step if they're capable of doing so. And if you can do so healthy, I think that's a long way to go about it, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And then, I don't know, guys, getting off the subject, but we had Pat Brisson on today, and he really hinted at a tough off season for Elias Pettersson, that he just couldn't train properly. And it's kind of the, maybe because you hear it from the player, you kind of heard it from the organization, but to get it from the agent today was a little bit different.
Yeah, and I think that's what, you know, I wanted to follow up on was your guys' discussion with Pat Brisson and the fact that he brought up, you know, the injury and the fact that, you know, that impacted his training in the off season. At the same time, the organization talks about how he needs to work harder. So even though Pettersson himself mentioned this in training camp, that he had to curtail his training, the organization doesn't quite feel like or hasn't felt like it mattered as much. You know what I mean? Like the injury shouldn't have had him curtail it as much, because why did he keep bringing up his lack of preparation, so to speak, right?
That's a great point. And when it first came out, you know, the knee tendonitis was hinted at or mentioned, it almost seemed like it caught the organization, i.e. Rutherford Alvin, by surprise. Like, well, I guess so. That's what he says. You know, that sort of was the reaction I felt. And then they talking about his preparation not being 100%. You wonder about the mixed messages there. But Pat Brisson seems to think it's real. And that's one of the most respected, you know, not just agents, but people in all of hockey. I mean, man, we had the interview with him today. And, of course, you know, I actually did some research for it for the first time in a long time.
Oh,
and
prep work. Good for you, Donnie.
Yeah, exactly. You young broadcasters out there. It's a good idea once in a while. But just the amount of people that he represents is amazing. And just CAA, you know, the company that he works for alongside J.P. Barry, they just represent. He's got McKinnon. He's got Crosby. You know, Pedersen, they handle, you know, Hedl and Myers on the Canucks. And the list of players that they're involved with is just amazing. So, you know, this is a powerful gentleman in the world of hockey. And he says Pedersen I know he's his client, but he said Pedersen had a problem training. So, you know, somewhere in the middle, at the very least, the truth lies.
Yeah, they need him to be a lot better, as we all know. Yeah. And hopefully he can build off of whatever it was on Saturday that he had going against the Maple Leafs. I mean, if anything, we know he's a true Vancouverite. Like, his two best games of the year were against the Leafs, Donnie.
You know, that is true, right? Because they're the Selke chance.
Yeah, the Selke game, yeah. Right.
You know, I not a Leafs fan, but I used to actually be a Leafs fan when I was a little kid, but that's another story. But I will say this, though. Just watching that game Saturday, I think the Leafs, and I'm not feeling sorry for them for one second. I actually don't mind the team. Even I just don't like the way that coverage goes in this city. That's in this country. That's what bothers me. Those, I always think it's like a playoff game every time they go into a Canadian city. So everybody wants to, you know, throttle them, and they got the pressure of their own fans in the building, and that even goes for their games in the States as well. It's just that's a lot of pressure to put on a bunch of young men, you know. So I you'd think they'd do better in the playoffs, given the fact that it seems like they're playing a playoff game every single regular season game, but. I almost felt sorry for them on set. Not quite, but almost.
Yeah, and just the whole crowd just gets so into it. The so Go Leafs good. Go versus the Go Canucks Go chants. I mean, it's just it's such a good atmosphere at Rogers Arena.
It's bucket list. Honestly, Dan, it's bucket list.
Yeah.
I think that for people who haven't been to a Leafs game at Rogers Arena, and, you know, obviously that I say it's bucket list because that's the opportunity most people in this city have. That's where you're going to see a Leafs game is in Vancouver. You know, I know this is easy maybe for me to say or other, but just buck up and go to one in your life.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. And I told this story today on the air, actually, in our show, is that this is kind of away from hockey, but the best fan fight I ever saw in the stands was at a Leafs Canucks. It was a head fight involved. It was crazy. And it was like rolling in the aisles. It was it was between a Leafs fan and a Canucks fan. So you could maybe look forward to that if you went to a Leafs Canucks game. It's just an amazing atmosphere.
It is, and some of it's low hanging fruit, like when they play the organ and they do the Leafs suck thing. It's it's so like easy and fun, and it's just and everybody just eats it up every single time. It's
I know how much you know so many people at your station, including yourselves, love the English soccer, and you know you get that those road because Europe is so compact, England is so compact, and you know to travel from one you know stadium to the other is not a big deal, and you just don't get that all the time. You get it to some extent in North American sports, obviously more so in the States where, you know, the geography is less troublesome. But you get a sense of what it's like over there, just a sense of it at the very least when you see the Leafs play in any Canadian city. It really is so special. It makes for a great atmosphere.
So Pat Brisson also represents Captain Quinn Hughes. I know that was a big part of your conversation on Donnie and Dolly today. With him and Quinn pulling out of the Four Nations face-off to focus on the back end of the season, getting healthy for the back end of the season with the Canucks, to which I say, as if this guy hasn't done enough already for this team, he's making yet another sacrifice. There is no reason for anybody else on this roster to not give 1,000,000% for whatever's left of this season to play alongside their captain with how much he's done for this team this year.
And you know, we look at the situation as people who cover the Canucks and yes, care about the Canucks, and anybody who's a fan and goes, man, the oblique situation, which is what the injury is rumored to be. Boy, it must be really tough. You saw him grimacing in Dallas to the point where you forget there's also the hand issue. And that's been there. It looks like it's something out of RoboCop, his arm. Like the way it's, he's got the splint on there and several bandages. And you forget that there's two injuries that he's dealing with. And I know that a lot of people are maybe of two minds, you know, disappointed they don't get to see Quinn Hughes at this tournament. Then again, it makes Canada's chances. Maybe it makes Canada's chances of winning the gold medal better because he's arguably, I don't even know if you argue it, he's arguably the Americans' best player. But I also wonder what it says of what he thinks of the Canucks' chances of making the playoffs with, 27 games left. And maybe he doesn't do that. Maybe he forces himself to play in this tournament if he feels that, look, I'm not going to be in the playoffs, so I want to play some important games, so this is it. And I think maybe this says that he believes in this team's ability to make the playoffs. And, you know, you forget that they're 3 points up on Calgary, but they're also just, if I'm not mistaken, just a couple of points behind L.A. for third place in the Pacific. So it looks pretty good right now, and I wonder if this is a little endorsement of what he thinks of the Canucks' chances of getting into the postseason.
Yeah, and I think this team, too, it's obviously aggressive. They're looking to make more additions. We know they want to add another impact forward and most likely a center being atop their wish list. But the way Filippito is playing, maybe that changes maybe what you're looking for as far as adding maybe another impact forward. Maybe you can look at a winger potentially. But if you're trying to convince Quinn, and Quinn now is not going to the Four Nations, and I'm not saying the Canucks should go and mortgage their future, but it's kind of important you put your best foot forward here and try to add to the roster, isn't it?
Well, if you know he's making this sort of sacrifice, maybe you feel more of an obligation to do it. It's just amazing how things change, though, isn't it, guys? I mean, you know, 2 weeks ago to talk like this, and you're right, Seth. Like, the way things are going right now. I mean, look at Calgary; they're ahead of them in the standings. The Canucks are ahead of them in the standings, and they made some significant moves. So did the Canucks, although that move was coming for the JT Miller, Marcus Pedersen move seemed to be coming since the beginning of time. But Calgary made moves with the playoffs in mind. So now that things look a lot better for the Canucks, will they be a buyer instead of a seller? It's really interesting, and maybe they feel more of an obligation to a great, great player who you got to buck up for in a couple of years and make sure he stays. And maybe one of the ways you do that is to let them know that you'll do whatever it takes to advance deep into the playoffs.
Do you feel like the team showed you something? Because it's been really bad without Quinn Hughes on the ice, right? All season long, and then they go 3-0-1 without Quinn in these four games. Like, is there something there that now you can parachute Quinn back into this lineup, and who knows what they can do?
Well, especially, you know, defensively, they look so much more stout now.
Yeah.
Just larger with Elias Pettersson there and Marcus Pettersson. There's a lot there. Those guys are both on the left side, and that looks like a fantastic left side right now. You know, when Quinn Hughes comes back, and maybe you can move things around a bit. But yeah, I don't know. Just they look really, really good without their best player. And Rick Tocchet has made the point too. And we had John Garrett on today, and he made the point is, maybe they've realized in the last little bit, especially without Quinn Hughes, that they're not that good. And I don't mean that necessarily as a criticism, that they have to grind out wins, even when it comes to grinding out a 2-1 win in overtime on a penalty shot against the worst team in the league in San Jose. And maybe they were just trying to, maybe it had too much belief in themselves offensively, or that they had too much belief in themselves talent-wise earlier, and then they make these moves, and maybe just woke everybody up to the fact that you can't take anything for granted. Maybe we're not that good, and we have to grind out wins, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think they did more of that last year, and that's been one of the problems this year.
We're talking to Dan Hamhuis coming up next segment. Obviously a great career and represented BC really well. And another Canuck legend, Louis Erickson, officially retired from the National Hockey League today.
I'm sorry, what?
Louis Erickson officially retired.
Didn't he retire when he signed that contract with the Canucks?
Yeah, well, I mean, I was going to get there. So what was your favorite Louis Erickson moment? Scoring on his own goal.
Scoring in his own net.
Having 0 points in 10 playoff games, or finally getting traded by the Canucks?
Okay, how could you not pick the first one? I mean, yeah, we always talk about things that are so Canuck. He signs this big contract. It doesn't seem as big now, but it was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was this thought that he was going to fit in so well with the Sedins coming off a 30-goal season with Boston, of all teams. He just doesn't seem like a fit at all with that organization. And his first significant moment is him scoring on his own net in the very first regular season game. I mean, that is it just doesn't get better than that. I almost felt sorry for him until I was reminded how much he was making. Yeah. But that would be his shining moment.
And we're almost reminded of it every time Dylan Gunther scores for the Utah Hockey Club.
Yeah, that's a good rubbing it in.
Yeah. Donnie, you're the best. Always appreciate the time. Thanks for this.
Anytime, guys. Lots of fun.
There he is. The great Don Taylor joining us here on Canucks Central. And yes, we do have Dan Hamhuis coming up. That 2016 free agent class, I don't know. It's got to be one of the worst in NHL history.
What's worse, that free agent class or the 99 draft?
Hey,
at least the Canucks came out of the 99 draft,
the
right?
Canucks benefited quite well from the 99 draft. But that 2016 free agent class, that was like the Luch contract, the Lucic contract.
Yeah, Andrew Ladd.
Kyle Okposo with who was it? With the Islanders that he signed that big free agent deal with. It was just a lot, and obviously Louis Erickson did not work out for the Vancouver Canucks, as we know. But yeah. Happy trails to him in retirement.
Godspeed.
He hasn't played a game in over a year and a half, but officially calling it quits at age 39. And I'm now reminded that Louis Erickson not that much older than I am. great. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. It is Canucks Central coming up. A real Canucks legend, Dan Hamhuis, will join us on Sports at 6:50.
Catch up on what happened in Vancouver sports with Halford and Brough in the morning. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back in on Canuck Central, it is hour number two, and we welcome in our next guest, a BC Hockey Hall of Famer in the 2025 class, a legend of the Prince George Cougars, now part owner of the Prince George Cougars, and of course over 1,000 games in the NHL, many with the Vancouver Canucks, and an Olympic gold medalist to boot. It is Dan Hamhuis. Thanks for this, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me.
I'm out of breath with all those accolades. It's quite the resume you got.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to look back on. It was, I guess there's been some reflection with this induction to the BC Hockey Hall of Fame, which is a pretty cool honor. But yeah, just thinking back to the career, and yeah, it's kind of amazing when you're in the moment and in the career. You just kind of, you go through it and you enjoy the moments and you be the best you can be moment to moment. And then, it's kind of interesting to look now, living kind of a different life, that it was, there's a lot of great things that happened, played on some really great teams with some good guys. And yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I mean, the journey obviously begins the first time you lace your skates, but as far as, you know, making it to major junior and playing for the Prince George Cougars and your first year there, like, what did you think? And did you see yourself having the career you ultimately ended up having?
Nope, not at all. It was those years, there's probably 3-4 years there where my curve of becoming a good hockey player went pretty much straight up from playing single-A hockey in Smithers at 15 in grade 10 to making the WHL was a huge jump. I'm not really sure how it happened. And then going from there, kind of just making the lineup, not producing a bunch as a 16-year-old, and then a couple of years later playing on the World Junior team and drafted to the NHL was a pretty crazy 4-year curve there. And I look back and I think a lot of it, did I think I was going to make it? I probably didn't really realize it till maybe my second or third year of junior. It's probably my second year, later in my second year of junior, when I was playing a bigger role. And I had a couple guys on the team, Tyler Bouk and Blair Betts. Trent Hunter was there as well. They were all drafted into the NHL. And I remember being kind of starstruck by these guys that they had gone to an NHL training camp and had played beside NHL players. And now I was on the same team as them. And that's when I think I kind of drew the connection of how close I was and kind of the path ahead. But so that didn't really happen until I was probably 17. Up until that point, I never really believed that a kid from Smithers could make it to the NHL. I just, you know, I was one of the better players on my team, but we were single A hockey and just figured, you know, double A kids, triple A kids from the cities would all be ahead of me. And yeah, I never really thought it was going to happen.
Well, obviously anybody who watched you in the NHL knew you weren't afraid of throwing a big hit and you would stand up for teammates, but the level of physicality and toughness you played with in the WHL, like, where did that come from? And that was that kind of what you felt like you had to do to separate yourself?
I think it's probably what got me noticed as a 15, 16-year-old is we had a coach that his name is Ed Dempsey, and you know, he loved kind of that old school hockey, play tough, play hard, and he rewarded you. And it's kind of the way that I played in minor hockey too. Once we were allowed to play full contact in bantam hockey, then I really embraced it. I love the physical side of the game. I loved watching Don Cherry's Rock'em Sock'em videos and try to then implement it out on the ice. And that really carried forward into junior hockey. And when I went to the training camp, I had no idea about junior hockey. I couldn't have named you two junior hockey teams in anywhere or any players that had played. I was just kind of eyes wide open. I had no expectations. I wasn't drafted. I walked on. And I think that mindset of kind of not knowing, no expectations. I just went in there, played physical, didn't worry about much. And I think that's probably the thing that got me noticed enough to have them keep me around a little bit longer.
Well, you talk about the Rock'em Sock'em clips, and I'm sure if Don put some of those together when you were playing, some of your hip checks would have made it. How did you perfect the hip check? And when was the first time you threw a big one in the WHL?
Oh, I remember it pretty specifically, actually, because I was billeting at my uncle and aunt's place, and they had Rock'em Sock'em videos, and I remember watching one the one night, and it had a whole hip check section on it.
Oh yeah,
and it was not too long after that. I remember, I think it was Kurt, I can't remember if it was Kurt or Kent. I think it was Kurt Sauer from Spokane came down the left side, and that's when I tried to mimic what I had seen on the Rock'em Sock'em videos, and it was one of the best ones I think I'd ever done. It was just, he wasn't expecting it, and it was kind of those hip to hip, flip them over, and I just remember the reactions from the crowd went crazy. I was like, oh, that was quite cool. and yeah, after that it kind of became my thing.
You know, just looking at the early parts of your career, you break in with Nashville, and you know, within a couple of years, you, Shea Weber, and Ryan Suter are all part of that D-core. Three top of the game young defensemen all coming into the same team together. I mean, that must have been pretty cool. Did you guys push each other? I mean, all of you. I mean, Suits is still playing and still playing pretty well to boot. But I mean, it's kind of crazy how all three of you were stars on that Nashville team.
Yeah, Nashville kind of, they had a pretty good run there of, and they still do, of drafting and developing good young defensemen. And it was a lot of fun playing with those two guys. I don't even know if we realized it at the time, especially those two, like how good they were. I mean, they were both playing in the Olympics in 2010 in big roles too. And like I kind of said earlier, it's, you don't really realize it at the time. You're just playing, your buddies having fun together. And we had some pretty good teams in Nashville in the mid 2000s. I think we were just a couple points off the President's Trophy the one year. And yeah, those like Suits and Webs, they were huge parts of that. And yeah, I was actually looking the other day. I noticed that Seuss, I think he's the oldest player in the league right now and probably has the most games played currently in the for sure the oldest. I think he might have the most games played too. He's had an amazing career.
Yeah, 1,500 games, which is an absolutely astonishing number. 40 years old playing in the NHL. And you guys are kind of, you know, similar age range. You're a couple years older than Suter and Shea slightly. But how much of an influence was a guy like Kimmo Timonen, who I thought was one of the more underrated defensemen? How much of an influence were guys like that were veterans part of that team?
Yeah, I mean, he'd be one for sure. We had we just had a really good culture there in Nashville when we came in. Barry Trotz was an excellent coach for us. Very approachable guy, just a good human. Like, he was just a guy that cared about his players, and he worked extremely hard. He was the example himself of hard work and what he expected from his teams, and his teams played that way. We usually punched above our weight class and made the playoffs some years with very low payrolls. And but I think it was just that kind of that hard work mentality was the culture in Nashville, and certainly when we were there in those years.
You mentioned the Olympics, and you get to go in 2014. We're seeing the best on best come back together now for this Four Nations face-off, and it was fun putting together the Team Canada lines. But I'm curious, you know, how much of a career achievement moment was that for you? And then how cool is it getting together with all the best players in the game and getting the best hockey minds in the game and trying to figure it all out?
That was a pretty neat experience. I mean, that was certainly a high point for me in my career. Just getting named to that team was a huge deal to me. And, I was fortunate to play. I had a lot of Hockey Canada experiences. I think I ended up putting the jersey on nine separate occasions, a couple World Juniors, the Olympics, and then six World Championships. And it never got old. It was always a very special moment and so much pride putting that jersey on and playing for the country. And, being able to do it at the Olympic level was super cool. Just the whole experience outside of the hockey too, of seeing, being a part of the bigger Team Canada, of being supporting other athletes and meeting the other Canadian athletes and cheering them on, and then having them come cheer us on. That whole part of it was a kind of a very unique experience from the other Hockey Canada trips that I had done. And then that bond with the players that we got to play with. I mean, it was a pretty star-studded dressing room in the hockey world. But you never really know. They're all just good guys down to earth. And it was a fun experience.
Well, you joined the Canucks in 2010. You signed as a free agent in the summer. And what a first year you guys had. You go to the Stanley Cup final that year. And, you know, we always talk about guys from BC want to come back home. But, you know, life happens, right? You get traded. People offer you a contract. It just doesn't line up. But you seem to have a real determination, Dan, to come and play for Vancouver, because you got traded twice in that offseason. Your rights were moved to the Flyers, who couldn't sign you. Then the Flyers moved your rights to the Pittsburgh Penguins, who couldn't sign you. And then you ultimately signed with the Canucks. I remember you talking after you signed that there were still teams in the last minute trying to offer you even more money to not sign in Vancouver. Why were you so determined to come to Vancouver when all these other teams were vying for your services and perhaps willing to give you even more?
Well, you guys did your homework to know. That's like a fun fact that no one knows. I was property of those of Philadelphia and Pittsburgh that year. That was a time when free agency was different than it is now, too. Now they have that courting period where you can talk to teams and basically do a deal kind of on your own timeline that week leading up to free agency. And there's not a lot of surprises anymore on July 1st. But then it was when I went through it on the July or 2010, it was chaos. Like, it was, we had no idea. We had some teams that we thought were interested in me, and I had some teams that I thought I was interested in. You look at, you know, the fit for a family, the fit for myself and my role, the team, is it good? Does it have a chance to win? You factor all these things, and at different times in your career, I think that all those boxes kind of are different sizes, and some mean more than others. I guess money's another one that fits in. There's another decision point, and there's a whole bunch of things. But in, at that point, Vancouver just... Vancouver is one of probably three teams that checked the most important boxes for me. And, Yeah, there was some other options out there. And at that time, you know, I think what Vancouver offered meant more than the money that some of the other teams had offered. Like you're right, there was some higher offers that were put out there, but we were excited about the fit of Vancouver. And it's something I've never second guessed or regretted making that decision.
So how do you look back at your time with the Canucks? You spent 6 years here, ultimately went to the Stars and finished off your career going full circle with the Nashville Predators and ultimately losing in the Cup Final, you getting hurt in the Cup Final. Like obviously that can't be easy, but how do you look back at those years and what could have been back in 2011?
Yeah, you know, that's a tough year with the way the last game ended, but I still look back at my career and that was one of the highlights, like a top three highlight for me right up there with the Olympics was just that run, that group of guys, how we did it. And the whole 6 years was real special for me. It was a great time in my career. I was kind of in the prime of it, in the prime 6 years of my career, being in Vancouver. And you know, it's a great group of guys. The organization treated our family and me so well while I was there. And it meant a lot for me just to wear that jersey. It's a jersey that team that I watched growing up. And just see how much the team means to the Vancouver community, but also the province. And it was quite special being involved in all the charitable initiatives that the team's involved in and the impact that the team has with the Canucks for Kids Fund all throughout the province. And so it was more than just the on ice. It went a lot deeper than that for me, wearing that jersey and representing the team throughout the province for those 6 years.
And now you've become part owner with Prince George, the team you came up with in the Dub. What's it like being on the other side of things, still in the hockey world?
Well, it was more fun being a player.
yeah,
but it's a neat way to kind of still be connected to the game. Prince George is a special place for me, and the team was a special. Prince George, yeah, the Cougars was a special place in my career and my development. So to have a chance to be a part of that, I wasn't sure at the time. I mean, that was almost 10, 11 years ago when we got involved with the team, and I was still playing then, but thought, you know what, maybe if I'm going to get into hockey at some point later, this could be an opportunity. And who knows what it could bring, but it's been neat. The team's doing quite well the last few years. We've got great staff in there, great people, great group of kids in there right now that are playing hard, and it's been a lot of fun to be a part of.
Do you watch a lot of NHL hockey? Do you watch the Canucks at all?
I have been. I wouldn't say I'm the most dedicated fan, but I do really enjoy watching it, and have seen a fair amount of games this year.
What do you think of Quinn?
Well, I wish I knew what it felt like to play like that. That would have been fun.
Skate like that. It's crazy.
And you're a great skater yourself,
Dan. It's amazing.
Right?
It's amazing. I wouldn't even dream of doing some of the things that he tries on the offensive blue line. And it's quite something to watch. And yeah, it's too bad he's hurt for the tournament here coming up. But man, he's just had an amazing couple of years, and it's neat to see how he's stepped up too, and with the leadership role he's been given.
Before we let you go, we got some of our listeners showing us a snowman they've built in their front yard, and they put the old Dan Hamhuis jersey on the snowman. So you're still represented well around the city here, Dan.
Well, it was always a pleasure playing in the city and wearing that jersey, and still enjoy coming down and seeing some of the guys and the training staff and everyone that's around there still. So yeah, thanks guys. It was great chat with you.
Thanks a lot, Dan. Take care.
You too.
There's Dan Hamhuis into the BC Hockey Hall of Fame, and you know, incredible NHL career, incredible hockey career in general, obviously, with the gold medal on top of it as well.
Honestly, one of my favorite Canuck defensemen to watch. He was so smooth. He skated so effortlessly. I mean, obviously not Quinn Hughes, but, you know, it's kind of funny when you see a guy like Dan Hamhuis, who in his prime skated really well, very smooth, good on his edges, just a tremendous overall player, just gush over Quinn. And you see the difference of Quinn, who's like a figure skater on the ice almost, right? It's just sensational what he's able to do. But I love watching Hamhuis play, man. He was so good defensively, such a quality defensive player, and he moved the puck effortlessly as well. Like, you know how we talk about how the Canucks have added Marcus Pedersen and how good he is? Like, Dan Hamhuis was like a supercharged version of Marcus Pedersen, right? Like, you know, defensively, maybe some similarities. Pedersen's obviously taller, but Hamhuis was a far better puck mover.
Yeah.
And he could even play on the power play if need be, right? Like, there was a lot of quality to Dan Hamhuis' game. And I thought that year, in 2011, he was the Canucks' best all-around defenseman. Edler, when he was healthy, was their best offensive defenseman. Ehrhoff was their most productive defenseman. He was killer on the power play. Bieksa did his thing. But nobody was better overall than Dan Hamhuis. And losing him in the Cup final, that was an absolute death sentence for this Canucks team. But he was such an incredible hockey player.
He really was. And, you know, understated. But really, you look back and especially his early career in Nashville, you know, he was like a pretty consistent above 20 points, almost got to 40 points once with the Vancouver Canucks, which as a defenseman in the role that he was in, never really playing top power play unit or anything like that. He was just consistent.
Yeah.
And it really speaks to all those things that you just mentioned, how consistent he was with his game.
And he could play a matchup role. Him and Bieksa essentially were the matchup pair. They're out there against the team's best opposition consistently. And he was tremendous at doing it, right? You know, and Mike, the urologist, mentions, I feel like I never heard Dan Hamhuis speak as a player when he was a Canuck. The original Philip Hronek, great interview. He sounds like a great guy. And yeah, he was kind of, you know, not as outspoken, pretty quiet, stuck to himself. When he met with the media, it was kind of very consistent, safe answers, didn't say much, right? They didn't rock the boat in any way. And, you know, you heard a bit more of his personality. And it's always fun to catch up with guys after they finish playing. They've had some time to reflect on their careers. And it's always fun, I bet, to go back and reminisce and talk about the good times and what happened and try to relive some of those things.
And just thinking about those Nashville teams, imagine having Suter, Weber, and Hamhuis all in their early 20s.
It was
all
unreal.
On one team.
Well, and the thing is, they had a bunch of other... The incredible thing about the Preds was they had drafted so many defensemen, and it seemed like there were a couple other guys coming too. There was Ryan Parent, who ended up not really working out. He was another high draft pick, and there were a few other guys, but man, they were stacked.
Yeah. And they built some pretty good teams around that. Obviously, you know, they tried to swing big with Peter Forsberg, and Paul Kariya even had a couple of good years with them, but it just never... They always felt like they were maybe a big piece in the forward group away from doing more damage than they ended up doing.
That Forsberg year when they traded for him?
Yeah.
I think they lost in the second round of the playoffs, but I mean, that team was stout. And Forsberg still was playing well too, right? Yeah. Like you were getting a good version of Forsberg back then. Yeah, I think they lost in the first round that year too, whatever it was.
But. Peter Forsberg in Nashville, 17 games, had 15 points, 2 goals that season. And they ended up losing in the quarterfinal to San Jose in 5 games. So a team that just couldn't get it going in the playoffs. And it's too bad because, I mean, you go in with Suter, Hamhuis, Timonen, Shea Weber. It's like, okay, who cares who's on our third pair? We can play these guys for 50 or 55 minutes of the game.
Yeah, it was
unreal. We're pretty set. So, just not that we need to, this isn't Predator Central, but it's fun to look back on some of those teams.
Yeah, and, you know, like, Hamhuis leaving that team, and then now they had cap constraints too, budget constraints and all that, but if they would have kept Hamhuis.
Mm. Yeah, could have been like, interesting.
Yeah, but I agree with Ron in Maple Ridge. If Hamhuis doesn't get injured, do the Canucks win the Stanley Cup? I'd probably say yes. Like that, he was their most steady presence. Not having him on the back end, I think, especially in some games where things went haywire for the Canucks, I think if they would have had him, it would have made a big difference.
And that 2014 Sochi team, thinking about Team Canada coming up here, they were just like, it's like they never broke a sweat.
No,
they
that
never
was like,
gave up the puck. Drew Doughty was just like a savant that tournament. It was like peak Drew Doughty in that game.
It was
in those games.
Utterly dominant.
Yeah.
Like it was just, they just breezed. it was like they gave up nothing.
I know Nick Backstrom ended up getting, suspended for the final, but it was just like,
whatever.
Nobody
matter.
Was touching Canada anyways.
No, they just always had the puck.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like that was effortless. Like they were working hard, but they just played a better forechecking, cleaner game than anybody else, and they just never gave the puck up.
Yeah, and they didn't really like blow anybody out, but they just they just played keep away for most of the tournament, and that was kind of the way they won.
Yeah.
Speaking of Team Canada, we're going to get into some of these line combos and everything else that we saw today in the first day of practices for the Four Nations face-off clubs. What's Elias Pettersson up to? What's the top power play unit looking like for Team Canada? All those things coming up, and some of our thoughts and feelings about the Super Bowl as it was last night. Jampro, from conference rooms to kitchenettes and everything in between, Jampro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit jampro.ca. Canuck Central continues on Sportsnet 650.